The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill, and by popular demand, I'm delighted again to be able to speak to Judith McKenzie of Downing, one of the finest small and mid-cap investors. So welcome, Judith.
Good to see you again, Paul. You say that to all the girls and the boys, actually.
Only ones which are doing well. Now, we've had a bit of a hangover, actually, on the markets in January so far, after a really strong November and December, a bit of a sort of Santa rally. What's your sort of outlook overall for equities for the rest of the year in 2024, and particularly in your sort of sweet spot of small and mid-caps?
Yeah, we were lucky and good, hopefully. We ended the year across our small cap and our AIM mandates up, which is good. We are on our AIM IHT, we were up about 6.3% against the market that was obviously down about 6.7%. And I think the pleasing thing about that was it wasn't all in those last couple of months of the year. It was quite nicely spread. And I think that's reassuring because I think we all felt a bit better with that Santa rally at the tail end. Yeah. But, you know, it's all about sustainable long-term performance, really, isn't it? Mm. And we saw that across our other mandates. Our income mandate was also up modestly, but it was also chucking out a 4.5% yield. I did feel that the rally in December was probably a little bit premature. Mm. We've still got headwinds. I know that as fund managers, we don't necessarily like to talk about them too much, but, you know, clearly there are some headwinds out there, albeit that, you know, it's great to be able to do a proper look through towards the tail end of the year. I think ING just came out this morning and said that they're forecasting inflation down at 1.6% by the end of the year. And it's that kind of narrative that would be really helpful to get our markets moving again a little bit more consistently, because we've seen quite a lot of volatility, haven't we, over the last 2 years, really. And our investors don't like volatility. And I think that's why they have been putting... I think everybody knows that UK small cap is cheap. They know it's ridiculously cheap in terms of the last 50 years, but nobody's doing anything about it because... they're just weak. They don't mind if they miss out in that first sort of 5%, 10%. They've already missed out, most likely. But the fund allocators are just not, they're just not really making that decision just yet. And I think, you know, the consumer, we've had this talked about quite a lot, haven't we? The consumer had a bit of a, a grab for anything, really, when it came to going on holiday or...
Revenge spending,
that's the good word, isn't it? So that kind of featured last year. And I think coming into this year, that will probably dampen down a little bit by the middle of the year. And then actually you're going to get hopefully the inflation, maybe some interest rates coming down as well towards the tail end of the year. So the next sort of 3 to 6 months could be a little bit damp, but overall I'm pretty positive for 2024. And I've said it before, you know, these markets are so cheap. They're at 50-year lows really when it comes to small cap equity valuations. They tend to trade at around about 53% of the average of higher market cap equities. And actually, we're now just down about 33%. So, you know, there's a long way to go. You could actually get 6% outperformance just on re-rating alone. And we'll talk about some of these companies and the qualities of these companies that we've got here. And it was actually quite cathartic to go through this flock that we're going to talk about. When you look at the metrics that we like, return on invested capital, return on capital employed, cash in the balance sheet, and earnings growth, even over the last 3 years, you're seeing some really nice attributes coming through in these companies. Yeah. Some have got a few little bumps in the road, but I think we're fed up with other private equity or trade buyers coming into steel or tea, really. And I think there will be a decent re-rating on top of good earnings growth over the next 12 months or so. We're positive. I don't think it's going to go, or I don't want it actually to go off to the races too quickly, but I think it will be quite, hopefully quite sustainable over the next 12 months.
Yeah, well, you make some really good points there. I mean, it's certainly it's sort of like a lot of the future returns depends on where you start, and if you're got a really depressed equity valuation for say for small caps, which is already pricing in a deep recession, then even if we get a mild recession, which is probably where we're going to be in the UK, then actually that's a lot better than what the actual valuation is saying. Whereas if you're out in the States, for instance, in large cap tech, and you've got PEG ratios of 3 or 4 for the likes of Apple or Microsoft or these sort of stuff, then their pricing are perfect. It's perfect pricing. There's no landing whatsoever. So you're on the wrong side of the boat there, but I'm with you now. You've just touched on M&A. Obviously, it's a bit depressing that all our good a lot of our companies are being taken off. But you've had quite a few which have sort of benefited this year. You've had On the Market, smart metering systems, and I think you've had a number of others as well.
SureServe. Far Angel just hopefully going through at the moment as well. We've had a good number, and I suppose the depressing thing is that you're seeing the number of companies on AIM now down to about 630 odd. Mm. You roll back 7 years, that number was closer to 2000. Mm. So I do think that something structurally has to happen. You're seeing SJP, St. James's Place, big wealth manager, their allocation to UK equities has gone down from 30% to 10%. That's just nonsense, really, isn't it? And you're seeing 7 years of net outflows in UK small cap. You talk about recession, but the ONS obviously sneaked in their numbers and saying that they'd marked their homework wrong just on the Friday before Christmas, wasn't it?
Yes.
That actually, by any other metrics, we'd have said that we were in technical recession. So, you've got these are some of the things that we need to structurally change. And that is, I'm hoping, will come from the likes of the Mansion House reforms that have been talked about through the tail end of last year. But to be honest, they need to happen quickly. And I think that the only positive is that both parties, when you look at the detail of the business ministers of both parties, they're singing from the same hymn sheet when it comes to the Mansion House reforms. And I think that's really important. If we don't get that this year, it needs kickstart when it comes to pension funds investing in a UK small cap AIM to really turn around the fortunes of the number of companies that are at the moment having to leave AIM. And when a re-rating comes, that will disappear and IPOs will come back. But even today, we saw that obviously Panmure and Liberum are getting together. Mm. And that's showing that there really is just a dearth of corporate activity in the UK market, which is it's got to change, hasn't it? And we're going to make sure it does.
Well, to a certain extent, that can be positive, because if you need a lot bit of consolidation in certain areas with new technology and on that basis, then you need basically, you can't have so many small subscale operators. So there is some benefit. Anyway, let's go on to one of your stocks, which has done really well over the last sort of 12 months, is Cohort, which is a sort of like a specialist defense business, does in sort of like cybersecurity, surveillance, and sort of intelligence gathering, but also has got an important sonar angle to it, which is obviously all the submarines benefit. It's had a terrific run, but the order book is just out of this world. What is your latest on this one? Is this just a sleep at night safely type stock?
It's kind of in that bucket. I don't want to say that too much, but it is definitely in that bucket. I've actually held it since on and off since 2006, just after its IPO. And you look at the metrics here. It's got a return of capital of 13%, 9% operating margins, probably maybe distorted a little bit by the lower margin side of the business, and an EPS CAGR of 10% over the last 3 years. So it's a really nice quality business that. I should never say it lets you sleep at night, should you? Because that's
in
the
defense,
last thing it does.
Suppose.
Exactly. And it's in the set from a sector point of view, it's in the right space, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we don't do top-down theses here, but on this one, it is a well-run business in the right sectors. The comms and the intelligence side is going exceptionally well. And I think they've had a ratings benefit as well, because it's in the right place at the right time. Now, there will be a time to not necessarily have it in the portfolio, but for me, it is one at the moment that you can just, you know, let it sit there and yeah. have a nice ride on it.
Yeah.
And there's probably a couple like that in the portfolio that, you know, yeah. you've got sector dynamics that are going in the right way. No doubt we'll come on and talk about HET yeah. and Ramsden's,
yeah.
you know, where you get that kind of benefit from having these things in the yeah. portfolio at the right time.
Yeah, I certainly think with Nick Prest at the helm there and with the management team, at some point they'll want to sell, because I can yeah. remember Nick Prest has been, you know, big in Alvis and all the defence sort of companies. This was like 30 years ago, so he's obviously very good at it. He knows what he's doing, but at some point he'll probably want to sort of like move it on to another shop. So yeah, I'm with you. It's a winner, but it probably at some point is going to be a different owner. So let's move on to actually, you know, to go to the countercyclical plays. Let's go to Ramsden's, which came out with results yesterday. Had really strong 2023. But it actually had a quieter first quarter. I think it was in line. But I was just reading through some of the numbers, and I think they were saying that the jewelry was flat, and I think the pledge book is up. What's sort of your latest on this one? Because it should benefit as this consumer sort of like needs sort of funding, I guess.
Yeah, so we actually play two names in the space, H&T and Ramsden's.
Yes.
We added Ramsden's, H&T probably about 3 or 4 months ago. And, you know, why do you have the same sort of exposure in the same sort of company?
H&T is the number one, is the UK's biggest pawnbroker, isn't
massively,
it?
Massively yeah. different. So the pawn book in Ramsden's is significantly smaller. And so in Ramsden's, you've got more of that FX and jewellery side of things. Now, we were probably a little bit cautious about the jewellery side coming into Christmas, if we're being honest. Now, I think and no doubt we'll argue with this with them when we see them, both companies, later in the week. But I think that Ramsden's is better on the jewellery side than it is than H&T is on the jewellery side.
Yes.
H&T, as you saw in the last set of results, had to write down quite a substantial amount on stock. And I think that's probably because they bought in a way that was at the top end of the jewellery cycle, whereas I think Ramsden's are much closer to the consumer.
Yeah.
So that's one of the differences. One thing about the results yesterday, I was slightly surprised and maybe a little bit disappointed about the FX in the last quarter. Because I thought that would have been, given what we've just said about revenge spending, I thought that would have been a little bit better. And what I want to try and figure out.
How did you read that? Because basically they're putting it out of two things, weren't they? Either tourists coming back and have already spent all their Forex, or actually holding on to it. And it sounded as though it was the former rather than the latter to me.
Yeah, I'm also wondering about market share. So they've got quite a dominant market share, but I know that pricing wise, the post office has been quite aggressive. As well on especially online ordering of currency. So I just want to make sure that there's not some kind of structural change there on the overall competitive environment, because I don't know. I mean, I don't think they really get that much from people coming back and cashing in their
You have a massive last currency. Night, don't you?
Yeah, exactly.
You just let it rip.
Exactly. You don't take anything back. You're spending on the plane, if nothing else. So I want to test that a little bit. The first time we've really seen that as well. If you look back in their statements, that's the first time they've really used that as being a reason for a weaker FX.
Yeah, no, that did seem weird. I mean, just to finish on Ramsden, I mean, they've got nearly a 5% dividend yield, and they're on a PE of about 9. So they're not priced to perfection, are they?
Yeah, no, I think that's about right. And you know, the other thing to note on that is that H&T came out with, they didn't come out with the analyst downgraded 2024 and 2025 about 4 or 5 weeks before Christmas, and that was on the back of the living wage which had obviously come out of the budget. So they were a little bit, the answer was a little bit late in doing it. And if you look at the Ramsden statement, it was quite defensive when it came to being able to pass on those higher costs. So you might have a little bit of cost inflation in there as well, where they're saying that will get made up with a good pledge book growth. But I'm being a little bit cautious in both of them.
Yeah.
H&T, we're probably expecting a statement out within the next few days, I suspect, as well. So we'll get to see how their Christmas trading was.
Yeah. How did H&T do in the credit cycle for the great financial crisis? Presumably, I mean, did they see any deterioration in that, or do they trade pretty well?
They traded pretty well, actually.
Okay. Yeah.
And of course, they've now put in another line of debt financing just middle of last year. And right. What the analyst hasn't done is not really taken into account that line of debt financing.
Yeah.
But it's taken into account the cost pressures. So I think, you know, on the whole, if you're looking for something that, you know, these two companies are relatively defensive as we're going into this point in the consumer cycle. We don't really hold anything else in that consumer space. You might see that Inspex is slightly sort of consumery, but nothing really on the high street, apart from the Works, which is budget. But yeah, this is the main exposure in our IHT portfolios.
Okay. What about, this is to move on to then, say, Inspex. I have noticed you've just been buying, haven't you? You just sort of like pushed up your position. This one's basically a designer, manufacturer and distributor of sort of, you know, eyewear frames and lenses and stuff like that. And it went through some real, I think it was IPO'd about 2 or 3 years ago at the top of the boom, did really, and then. It's all right.
Sorry.
I thought the sun had just disappeared. And then,
the lights have gone out.
So IPO'd and then obviously went through a few problems. Going through a big restructuring, but they have brought down their bank debt significantly. I've obviously got some operating leases and stuff like that, and it seems to be moving in the right direction. Is that what sort of what's piqued your interest there?
Yeah, I think, you know, we like things that have maybe had a bit of a hard time and where management have had to face off against the pressure of the market to a certain extent. Yeah. They're right. You know, they did profit warn and. They probably just got their, well, like many companies that have come with private equity backing, they probably got the first few years of forecasting a little bit ambitious. Mm. And we had to take a view that they were going to do what they said they were going to do, and that was to push through quite a lot of rationalisation and to use cash to pay down that debt. And I think the market's been a little bit cynical on that and has... not really believed. And I think there's probably, it looks really, really cheap. If you get the numbers coming through that you think you can, once this Vietnam CapEx is now out of the way, then it really is a very interesting recovery and growth story. And it looks very cheap. Return on capital at the moment obviously looks a little bit flat, but you're looking at EPS growth of this year coming of about 12%. And it is a bit of a turnaround year. And at the moment it's priced on about what your numbers say, but mine say about 12 times or thereabouts.
Yeah, I've got 13 times forward PE, but the important bit is the EBIT margin's only 7%, and you'd have thought from a sort of designer eyewear sort of like, you know, manufacturer, then it's got to be 10% plus. So there's a lot of self-help still to go in the margin.
I think so. And you know, this company is on the same earnings, I'm not saying this is right, but it's on the same earnings as it was when it IPO'd at £4, and it's on 85p today. Now, yeah, the IPO price was wrong, but, you know, was it that wrong? So, and I can understand why the market's cynical at the moment or will continue to be a little bit cynical.
Yeah. The guy who's operating your light switch is pretty cynical, I think, as well.
Yeah, well,
he's taking the mickey.
I am going to just wave about just so I can get the lights back on again. I'll stand up. Yeah,
people will think you're taking off there.
I know.
Okay, another one going through some self-help activities is Argentex, which has had it basically is a full-line sort of Forex international payments provider that has high touch with financial institutions, high net worth individuals and corporates, etc., and provides a sort of like a very tailored suite to them. And it's been relatively cheap. Anyway, what happened was that I think the CEO and the CFO have left, And they've got an interim CEO in there on the back of a new chairman as well. And it's going through a bit of a restructuring. The shares really tanked and trading at less than 9 times PE, yeah, even after a slight recovery. What's your sort of your latest on this one? Because obviously it's trading at very, very depressed levels compared to the sector.
Yeah, we were quite surprised about the management change, and it left a scratch. I think it did well. The market, I think, probably the share price was down about 20-odd%, 25% when on the management changes, I believe, or around that. So I had quite a big drawdown at that point. And I think folk just were wondering really what the story was. So Jim's come in, and we have listened to him, and we believe that, you know, he... I wonder whether he's going to go more down that B2B route quite heavily, almost actually encroaching a little bit on some of where Equals is.
Yeah.
I know that's one that you like as well.
Yeah.
So
well, it's a good model, isn't it?
It is a good model. But, you know, do you need to chase it? You know, Argentic's pretty good at doing what they're doing anyway. So we're just waiting to see really how much of a structural change there's going to be. And we believe Jim, and he's got a good, you know, he's certainly got an excellent background here. And, you know, you talked about some of the metrics. So the return on capital here is about nearly 20%.
Yeah.
And the operating margin is 30%. And there's not a lot broken, really, with the business. It's really probably just about that messaging and the strategic direction.
Yeah. I think they're doing a strategic review at the moment, aren't they? They're coming out with that. Yeah. When do you expect the results from that to flow through?
You're going to be another 2 or 3 months, really, before you start to see that properly flowing through, I think. And really the tail end of this year. So, but in the meantime, it's cheap to hold. So, and it's a nice space in the market. And as we've seen with this strategic review that has been launched with Equals just 2 or 3 months ago, then, you know, we believe that there's probably a bit of corporate activity to be got in this space. So these two are quite nice names to own, aren't they?
Yeah. No, I would agree. I think, you know, this price level, somebody's going to obviously having a look at it. You'd suggest that somebody would be having a look at Argentex and about it. I don't know whether you could quickly say anything on Equals at all. I mean, is it just really just wait and see for the end of the strategic review? They came out with a pretty positive trading update. In fact, I think the sales were up 37%. Year on year, and they actually did a bit of a milestone in the second half. They did over 50 million of turnover, which on an annualized basis is blasting through that 100 million, which is a terrific achievement for you know, that B2B international payments Forex platform.
Yeah, it was one that I didn't expect to come out with a strategic review, if I'm being quite honest. But obviously they'd had various approaches, and they needed to answer those. What do I think? I don't know. Maybe trying to read too much into the statement this morning and the way it was phrased. But I think there was an element of, you know, get away from our back door, we're trading well. So
yeah.
I could just, that might just be me wanting that to be the case, because I'd quite like to be you know, a holder of this business for the longer term. I think there's some really good things to come from it. You know, you look at what, actually, when we did our diligence on it initially, we did quite a lot of customer referencing and competitor referencing. And normally when you're doing competitor referencing, as you know, you can probably get, you know, the poison pill, you know, somebody just dropping something relatively sort of bitchy into the sentence. But actually, even the competitors were singing the praises of how lean and mean and well operating this business is. And I think that comes through as well on the Capital Markets Day. I don't know if you managed to watch any of those, but, you know, the culture within the business is, it seems pretty efficient. And I like the way that, you know, they really are targeting their own SMEs to just be spending more with additional services. I think that marketing, I was cynical on whether marketing like that, direct marketing, works to get a further upsell, but it really has seemed to be so with the case. So, you know, you're not just looking for growth in number of new clients coming on board, it's actually just milking what they have and doing it really well. So Yeah, no, I'd quite like to keep it for a bit.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I mean, I got the same impression when I spoke to the CEO, Ian Strafford-Taylor, after the interims. They came out with some really impressive numbers, but he was equally really, he wanted to really knock the ball out of the park. He was almost like, even though they were really good numbers, he wanted to have beaten them, and he was almost like thinking, right, okay, what's the next one? So the hunger's still there, which is a good sign. Okay, well, let's move on just to another sector that and another stock that's going through a bit of a restructuring is EKF Diagnostics, which is basically a bit of a crown jewel in all things sort of like, you know, blood testing, certainly for you know, sort of hematology and I think they do is, what is it, it's basically iron levels, iron deficiency, so for diabetes and stuff. That's their core business, but they've been expanding into enzyme production out in the States at their Indiana plant, and it's gone through a bit ups and downs and stuff like that. What's your sort of your latest on this one? Because you know, it looks like another one which is just primed to hopefully, you know, sort of like deliver on its promises, because it seems to be a high IPR business.
Yeah, this is one I've changed my view on a little bit. Now, I mean, it's frustrating for all the reasons in the hemoglobin side, core business. You would own that every day of the week, because you've got natural growth coming from the core markets. And you look back to, I think it was 2021, it was doing 40 million of revenues and around about 5 million of EBITDA. Mm. And it was growing at, I don't know, 7 to 9% per annum.
Yeah.
And then it had a massive over-earning year in, well, 2021.
Yeah, that's right.
90 million of revenues and I think 20
COVID testing, wasn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, I would rather they hadn't had those excess earnings.
Yeah.
The benefit of hindsight. Mm. Because actually what they did, albeit now previous management, what they did was they took that excess capital of 15 or 60 million, and in fact it was probably up to 21 million at one point. And they used it on buying a contract manufacturer that they then subsequently, the year later, had to write off completely. So shareholders never, ever got any benefit of that over-earning. I'd much rather they were just sticking to their knitting and being pretty boring. But what it did allow them to do, I suppose, was to go into that fermentation side, the enzyme side in the US. But it's changed, for me, it's changed the profile of the company. Because you've still got the core business, which is fine, but is maybe staggered a little bit through that COVID recovery period. Mm. And you've had a lot of capital being deployed in the US. Julian Baines, the CEO who had, chair, CEO, founder, who had resigned, basically put himself out the golf course back in 2021 after taking a good bit of capital out. Has been called back in by the headmaster, who I assume is Mr. Christopher Mills, to get back in and sort it out. And he is the right person to sort it out. We've got a lot of time with Julian, but I think it's more of a special sit now than it would be maybe in a core IHT portfolio. That being said, I think it looks pretty cheap on some of the parts basis. Yeah. And what I could be getting completely wrong is when, not if, that fermentation side goes through the betas as they are now and is successful, and you get the volumes coming up, then the share price will look completely wrong. Mm. But that is very much on the sum of the parts basis. I think they will sell off the core business, and that is probably worth at least 2/3 of the market cap.
Yeah.
And then the fermentation side could be worth double the market cap. But it is a bit of a binary outcome.
Mm. Yeah, well, let's wait and see. I think there'll be an exciting place to watch for at least M&A and some of the unbundling opportunities for the next 12 months. That's for sure. Another one in the healthcare sector, which you've done really well over a long term. I don't know how long you've in fact held it, is Tristel, which basically does chlorine dioxide sort of decontamination wipes and foams and liquids and stuff like that, sells into the healthcare. Started off its core in the UK, went overseas into Asia, into Europe, but has now just beachhead into the US and has got FDA approval to do that. It seems to be a long-term sort of compound, or a bit like a cohort, but perhaps even better returns.
Yeah, you know, we're talking about management teams leaving, founders leaving. So you've got Paul, who is he's now said that he is going to be hanging up his hat this year.
Yeah.
And he and the FD were selling down stock at the tail end of last year.
Hmm.
I think it's a great business. I am, you know, Paul Sunu is a great driver of this business as well. And I'm probably looking to see who steps into the helm. They went through a real, I kind of came out of it for a while back, I'm talking about 7 or 8 years ago, when they made that investment decision. They raised money and they made an investment decision to invest really heavily in their UK site. And they really did that before they had much turnover. Mm-hmm. However, they proved everybody wrong. And they got that that international business, and you know that facility is pretty much working at full capacity. So, and then you've got the icing on the cake on the US side. In fact, probably a few parallels here with EKF as well. I think the core business is valued fairly, and I think once the beta trials go through in the US, that side of the business could actually just make quite a significant difference. It could be another third on the earnings. And you know, you said it's, you know, this is a business that's got a return on capital again in the sort of mid-teens. So a really nice quality business. Not the cheapest, but a nice business.
It generates massive cash flow, doesn't it, as well?
Yeah.
I remember it from a long, long time ago, but it came out the sort of the great financial crisis and was struggling a bit and going from sort of like solutions into other products. And it came up with wipes, and wipes has just been transformed it. Absolutely. Yeah. Just, you know, margins, and it just means it's so much easier for doctors and nurses to decontaminate sort of like, you know, sort of small instruments, hospital instruments, I think. Okay, another one which you've done really well. And I remember we chatted about this for 2 years, and frankly, I should have, my father benefited. So thanks very much for that, is Ashtead Technologies, which is a marine rental business for the offshore wind and also oil and gas. And it's really gone from strength to strength. It's done acquisitions, and I'm not sure it raised any more money, but I think the business is flying. It's based up there in Scotland, and it's got huge tailwinds from obviously the resurgence on exploration with oil and gas, and particularly in the UK, which is the offshore wind side.
Yeah, you know, the dynamics are great, aren't they? And you know, we were lucky enough to spot this one just maybe about a year after it came to IPO.
Mm.
And because it was down the road from us, we pitched up on site, and it's the sort of business that you can see how busy they are by looking at literally their backyard, seeing what's been rented out. And you've got assets that are not, it's not like a where you've got massive bits of kit worth $300,000 to hire out. You know, you've got bits of kit that are five grand, $10,000. So you get some great optionality on that. You either hire it out or you sell it on. It's come of age a little bit. I saw this week that it's now like stock of the year for a couple of brokers, which is always a warning sign for us. But you know, we've ridden it quite nicely.
You're too cautious, Judith.
I know, exactly. But look, it's fine. If we can buy things at two-thirds of the price of that other people are buying it now and ride it through that wave, then we're very happy. And again, return on capital employed over 20%, operating margins in the 20s as well, and or the high 20s actually, and a 3-year CAGR of 30-odd percent, and forecast to grow this year by 25%. So, and a great quality management team as well. CEO and CFO sold about 400K's worth just at the tail end of the year. So I think it is actually, if you look, I can't remember the name of the non-exec, but he was the representative of Buckthorn, who is the VC.
Yes.
So, you know, they've managed to sell down their position nicely. So it's almost like moving on to being it's patronizing to say a grown-up company, but it really has come through that post-IPO period, delivered on pretty much everything it said it was going to do, and it's got lovely tailwinds as well. It's a good quality holding. And the Ace Wednesday business that they bought just at the tail end of the year, you know, there's nothing, not much in the earnings for that. So I think that will probably surprise on the upside.
Mm. Yeah, it should create, you know, more economies of scale, no doubt about it. And I would point even to investors. I mean, even though it's at about £6 just over, it's only just on about 8x EBITDA. Mm. And I would say this is a really high class rental, you know, equipment rental company, and has all the hallmarks actually of Crestchick, which got bought out, you know, not in the oil and gas by Agrico about 12 months ago. So, and that went to the cheap 10 times, never mind 8 times. So, good one. Another one you've done really well at, which I've got to buy more of your stocks here, is Journeo, which run by the CEO, Russ Singleton. And they've basically do all things digitization for electric boards, for, you know, rail and for the buses and for software systems and stuff like that. Do you want to give us your latest through? Because this one, again, has been a standout performer for you over the last 12 months.
Yeah, I think the great thing was that we were buying it on about 2.5 to 3 times earnings when we were buying it in at the time of the deal, which was in January last year. I'm getting my years wrong now, probably a year before that.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It all merges, doesn't it?
It does. So I think we were buying it at 120 or 125, now 280 today, but it's still not expensive. Mm. And you again look at the tailwinds that are in the sector, you know, the transport, the rail sector, and the bus sector, and it's all leading to more data, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's simple stuff, but you know, you go into Paddington Station now or any of the big mainline stations, and you'll see the added data that you're getting on the boards, and they're right behind that, obviously, and the same with buses as well. And you're now getting much more, if we ever really get to it, but an integrated transport system where you've got transport and rail sort of tied in together. And rail tied in together, and they're really part of that. What I don't think they've done so far, which they will capitalize on from an IP perspective, is really to own and manage that data a lot better. Mm. In the past, they've probably been a bit more of a hardware seller, and you'll see now that they're much more a SaaS model. Still early doors, 20-25% of revenues, but watch that emerge over the coming 12 to 18 months. And I think even again, you're going to get a bit of a re-rating. Another position in that space that we really like is Traxys. I know that we've spoken
about it. Oh, yes, Traxys, yeah, quality.
And I think, you know, if they weren't independent, Journeo and Traxys would sit really nicely together. And I think there's a lovely play in that general space. Mm. You've got unified ticketing, all those dynamics coming through. And Journeo, we actually had to say to them, we just stop churning out news flow, which we don't normally say, because the contract wins were, they'd vowed to only announce when it was over £1 million. But I don't know if you noticed last year, but there must have been about 10 or 12 contract wins over £1 million. They've now raised their bar a little bit higher. So they're not announcing quite so often. But yeah, really like that business. It's quality.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, Journeo is on about 12 times just over PE, even though the price is appreciated. I'm not sure what Traxys is on, but I think it's about 20 times. So,
and the rest.
Yeah, okay, yes. Yeah. So there is a long way that if Journeo can actually replicate the Traxys type model, then there's a big performance upside, isn't it? Re-rating coming.
Yeah.
Another one which I think you've been buying all is Avingtraz, which is basically a specialist engineer in sort of nuclear and small four MRI and X-rays, and also, you know, energy and stuff like that. And it's going through a bit of an investment year, but it seems to have really good visibility, sort of 95% over its revenues in terms of go forward. Strong position with Sellafield, also does blast-proof doors, really niche, high, you know, sort of like integrity products and aftermarket services. Do you want to give us your latest one on this one? Because, the management team have knocked the ball out of the park over 20 years.
Yeah, the two Steves.
Yeah, that's it, the two Steves.
Yeah, they're really good at buying businesses. And the way, you wouldn't necessarily just look at this one on an earnings basis. Mm. I know it's been said many a time, but it is a bit like a mini Melrose to a certain extent. So they're good at buying businesses. They're also really good at selling them. And I know they're good at buying businesses because they got me over a barrel with the Booths business.
I can't believe it. They must be good then.
No, it was painful. It's painful. And it even more painful when we're seeing...
Hayward Tyler by any chance?
No, it wasn't. It was Redhall. It was Redhall.
Oh, is it Redhall? Oh, yeah, okay.
Business.
Well, they were in struggling, weren't they? So they 15 were, years ago, I remember.
Yeah. So, yeah, we had backed it about 6 years ago to do a turnaround of the Booths business.
Yes.
And we're taking too long to do it. And cash flow got to us just at the same time as Hinkley Point was going through all those machinations as to whether there were stop, go. So yeah, they bought it from us at an absolute steal. Absolute
well, at least you've done your due diligence now on Avintraz.
Yeah. Booths is a quality business. We've seen the order book now. It's now at top levels, isn't it? So I reckon that it's probably getting ripe for maybe moving that business on. You've got all the right tailwinds when it comes to the dynamics in that now a much more mature nuclear sector as well, isn't it? But then you've got, and then actually, ironically, Adaptix, which is the MRI
X-ray.
Business.
No, it's the X-ray business. Side, yeah.
Yeah, that was bought from EIS investors, which were Downing investors. So
you own this business anyway.
We might as well just take anything in our closet and hand it over to Avintraz so they can manage it better. And that's effectively what they did with Booths. So on Adaptix, they've got another business in that space.
It's called Magnetica.
Thank you. Yeah. And of course, there's real synergy between those two. Yeah. Now, it will mean that the business is cash consumptive this year, of course, won't it? I think we'll probably end up consuming about 6 or 7 million of cash on that kind of quasi healthcare space. But, you know, that's bringing imaging into the GP surgery. And with those two businesses combined, you know, the value of that IP, it's quite substantial. And then obviously you've got the asset backside too, where you've got the facility that's probably sitting in there at a valuation of £10 million. So, you know, put these components together, it looks cheap. It maybe doesn't look that cheap on an earnings basis as of today, but I think you've just got to look at it almost like a VC portfolio.
Yeah.
And as long as the two Steves are there, and Roger McDowell was obviously chair too, as long as that management team is in place, then we'll continue to back it and help them recycle their cash.
Yeah, well, I think you're one of plenty of sort of smart investors are on board that. I know Christopher Mills is there as well, so he'll be holding their feet to the fire, I'm sure. One company in that sort of space, well, basically in sort of regulatory information as a consultant, is Marlowe, which is a buy and build. And I was just doing the numbers, and apparently it did 36 acquisitions in 3 years, which is one a month, which is pretty good going. But they've fallen on a bit harder times. The share price has repriced. Yep. They've got a bit of debt to correct and stuff. What's your latest on this one? Because it does appear from the share price solely that the wheels have fallen off. But what about operationally?
Yeah, I mean, so 36 acquisitions, and as you see, since 2021, and they spent £426 million on them, and the market cap stays 380. So it's telling you that the market's very cynical. Yeah. They did too much too soon, basically. Mm. These are nice sectors, aren't they? Governance, risk and compliance. And you're in healthcare sectors, you're in government. So, they're in the right space. They got indigestion, I think, is probably the best way of putting it. And I think we expected, did the market expect it? I'm not sure. we thought that when we were investing at first that they were going to be focusing on driving cash generation and paying down debt, and they kind of did the opposite to a certain extent. But they seem to have got the message now, and that's what we're holding out for. I think the share price has been kicked for all the right reasons, as they missed that missed those earnings, and you know, debt is still over 2x EBITDA. So you're in at the moment in this kind of market, you really need to see anything that's over 2x deleveraging. Easy for me to say, and they are going through a bit of a strategic review, and there's a an argument as to where there might be a separation of the group. You've got the two sides of the business, haven't you? So I think we would welcome that. And again, it's maybe not something that you put in as core to a portfolio, but it's one to watch in the sidelines. And probably if there's a bad day in the market, it's probably quite a good core business to pick up. You know, it's a good quality underlying earnings, but they've managed to muck up the message on the way through.
Maybe they should give Steve and Steve the ring on the bat phone to help them sort the operations out.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll pay particularly highly for their assets, though.
No, they wouldn't. No, they don't. So I think it either gets taken out or it degears and then it returns to a bit more favour. But yeah, the share price has been pummeled.
Another one in that similar space, which has got a bit too much debt and had to do a sort of surprise or emergency placing, but it was at a premium, XP Power, which basically does sort of like, you know, power converter solutions. What's sort of the latest on this one? Because it was a darling and was really sort of repriced down on depressed earnings. It's on about 12x PE.
Yeah, it's cheap, but it's still got a lot to do, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's 2.6x on debt, and it's forecast to come down to 2. You've got a half 2 waiting, which always makes you nervous.
Yeah,
came out with a statement the other day, didn't they? And you know the numbers looked fair, but actually what you didn't really all that was really doing was it was a delay in the rollout of the facility, the new CapEx facility. This is a real play for me, and I don't like single plays, but it's a real play really on the semiconductor industry coming back up and that kicking through. You don't really get that many pure plays on that semiconductor exposure in UK small cap. So it's more of a special sit than anything else. And I probably took more kind of warning signs than I did positive from the update the other day. So I think it's one to tread cautiously on. I think it will come back or get taken out, you know, but the execution risk on it actually delivering, you know, it's definitely not out of the woods yet.
Yeah, it looks pretty highly geared, doesn't it? I mean, three times EBITDA, net debt is about 3x. So they've still got some. We've got a bit of heavy lifting there, haven't they?
And you've got a few. It was a bit of a darling, wasn't it? And so you've got a few income funds that are still on the list. So they cut the divvy, and there's no way that you should go back to even thinking about a divvy again for a good long while, if ever. So you've got that to be tidied up as well. And I think that's probably dampened the share price too. But yeah, one to tuck away is probably more of a PA pump than anything else, I suspect.
Yeah. What about Volex, which is obviously run by exec chairman Nat Rothschild? They've done a really sort of like, you know, astute acquisitions over the last 3 years. Share price hasn't really done much, actually. Trades at about 11x PE, but they've say the deals they've bought or the companies they've bought seem to be good businesses out in, say, Turkey, low cost, and lots of good synergies, I imagine, on the cost side and on the distribution side.
Yeah, you know, the Murat business that they bought, I think, you know, you've got to see those earnings coming through yet. And I think, you know, the market again is a little bit, there's always a degree of either spending on acquisitions or capex, and then that free cash flow comes back through and you get a bit of a deleveraging effect. And I think the market has always been a little bit cynical about that. However, they've done it now probably over 2 cycles and they've proven that they can. They've got all the decent headwinds that you'd want, or sorry, tailwinds that you'd want once again on that EV side of the market. I mean, this has been a core holding for us for quite some time. We probably got in 5 years ago when it was about 45-50p, so, and then saw it all the way up to about £5. We think it's looking cheap at the moment, but only on the basis that you're getting that free cash flow coming through, and you've got the earnings from the Murat deal that will come through as well. So they're good at buying things, really.
Yeah.
another one, a bit like
a bit of top slicing may have been at five, but that's a hindsight. There's plenty of those.
We did it a little bit on the way down. Never at the top, is it?
No. Well, I mean, you could. It's pure fluke if you buy at the bottom and sell at the top. That's for sure. Another one in that sort of space, which is going through a bit of a restructuring, lots of self-help, which you mentioned at the start is a key feature of what you look for, is Restore. And I think the old CEO has come back and started rolling his, Charles Skinner, I think his name is, started rolling his sleeves up. It basically does archiving of documents long-term. And I think it competes with likes of Iron Mountain out of the States. It trades at pretty cheap valuation the last time I looked at it, about 13 times. What's your sort of your latest on this one as a recovery play?
Yeah, it's kind of in that box with Marlowe, isn't it? You know, you've got some nice dynamics in the sector. They were probably a bit of a COVID overearner. And you've got you've got the digital side, and then you've got records management, which, you know, the margins are quite different from each part of the business. They definitely benefited from that bulk scanning through the COVID period. But, you know, that's non-recurring. So you have to look at the underlying quality of the earnings at any point in time. It's under cost management with the returning management team. And it's also got a little bit of debt. So, you know, it's not one to rush at. But I think, you know, see what happens during that cost review. Because I think there's definitely a lot of fat there that could be trimmed, so there could be that self-help, and it's got a market leading position, so not one to rush at, but probably be buying it on a bad day, and certainly be buying it when you're seeing sign or any kind of real sign or narrative around what is happening specifically on the cost savings. That's a good time to do it.
Okay, good.
Return of cash to shareholders is what we'd like.
What about one which is returning cash to shareholders is Team Internet, which is the old Central Nick. It seems to be buying up quite on a stock buyback. I was just looking at I think it's net debt. It's still got quite a lot of net. Well, I suppose its net debt is absolutely fine, actually, given it's about 100 million of EBITDA. What's your sort of late on this one? It seems a bit of a controversial stock in terms of, you know, is it a sum of the parts? Is it an earnings story? I mean, it trades on less than 7x PE.
Yeah, I don't understand why people don't like it in the same way that we maybe see it. You know, I think part of the issue is that it's always got the domain name side of the business, which is great quality. And then you've got the marketing side, and that's maybe a pretty crude way of putting it. But, you know, it's trying to enhance the way that you use your domain name, your website. Yeah. So it's, I suppose, in the credit sense, it's marketing services. So it's kind of upselling that marketing services solution to their existing customer base. And I think it's that part of the business that maybe the market doesn't like too much, because it's cyclical and it's lower margin and it's not really recurring revenues, which obviously the domain side is. I think you're right, there's probably a play, given that the sentiment towards it has been, it's probably not rated as it should be from a domain player point of view, if you look at some of the competitors in the States. So you'd like to think that management are taking that on board, and especially in a slightly more cyclical market on the marketing side. Then maybe looking at some kind of corporate solution there.
And something like GoDaddy or something like that.
And I think, that's exactly. I think they could probably get a nice multiple uplift by doing that. And it's a management team that own a decent amount of stock, albeit they had been selling down, I think, pre-Christmas as well, hadn't they? It was like the through last year, there's a couple of million of stock that was traded. So Yeah, we'll I like the core earnings. Something will happen with it, I suppose, is the summary on it.
Yeah. Okay, good. Well, one to watch out for, no doubt about it. It isn't exactly very expensive. Another company in sort of the data side is OneSpatial, which does sort of location master data management for a lot, for largely for big utilities, I think. And it's been sort of like doing really well out in the States. It's really sort of started to blossom, increasing its recurring revenue streams and improving its margins. And it seems to be going from strength to strength, actually, just as a good, slow, solid compounder.
Yeah, it's not cheap. It's on,
Yeah.
I think, 22 times earnings or
Yeah.
thereabouts. But it's a, you know, it's a good quality play. And you know, prior to Christmas or maybe just the start of the year, they were trying to get that point out on that recurring revenue, weren't they? I think they put out one announcement that had five contracts in it and showing that they'd all been extended and it was all multi-year contracts. So really trying to highlight to shareholders that they were doing what they said in the tin. So it's in a great space, you know, the
Yeah.
government utilities and transport, again going back to that journey old Traxys type quality of earnings, just in the right space. And actually I think a really well run business. I think you could it's not a forecast, but you could see, you know, EPS growth of pretty much double over the next 2 to 3 years in this business. They've got a real USP, and you know, you look at the competitive advantage here, then the barriers to entry are quite significant. So, you
They must have something because there's some big competitors in that area, and if they're winning all these contracts, they've got something unique that definitely I mean, you know, if you're a US utility, you go to Silicon Valley for your software. You don't go to over the, you know, the other side of the Atlantic unless it's really good. So yeah, they must have something, no doubt about it. Well,
yeah.
one company that used to be a bit of a darling is Strix, which is obviously does the design and manufacture of sort of like, you know, kettle safety controls. And I think it did a pretty, should we say, brave acquisition of a water company, I think, or water sort of like, you know, heating purification businesses. And that didn't seem to go quite well. It's left them with a bit of debt and again a bit of a battleground stock. The shares have come off a lot, traded about 7 times PE, but they've still got some heavy lifting to do in terms of the balance sheet.
Yeah, we came out of this one
Oh, did you?
and
Oh, okay, yeah.
still watching it, you know, but there's still red flags, I think. You know, they too much leverage,
Yeah.
basically. Dividend cut again, and you they were spending really heavily on acquisitions without really thinking about it's a capital allocation issue for us with this management team. You know, they're just going to hell for leather and hoping things would stick. There's a bit of a if you look at the stat earnings and the adjusted earnings, there's an awful
Yes.
lot of stuff going in the middle there.
Yeah, okay.
So that for us was really you know, alongside some pretty poor cash conversion. I really like the space. They've got a dominant market position, but I think they really just need to show that they're focusing on the core business instead of going off and playing with anything that's shiny and new. So yeah, they've always focused on that top line growth, and we're liking the cash generation, or we're liking the cash generation and return on invested capital. But yeah, they've just taken their eye off that completely. But we'll keep
Yeah.
an eye on it. We'll keep an
Yeah.
eye on it.
There was probably too much sort of like, you know, strategic advisors in the mix saying you've got to diversify to grow, and it'd have been better just sticking with your knitting, but hey
Yeah.
ho. And the last one on that sort of like consumer side is Supreme, which has come out, was knocking out outstanding results, lots of cash generation, very few adjustments between sorry about that. A few adjustments
Bless you.
between reported and actual, sorry, the numbers, etc. Seem to have a bit of an overhang with the government consultation on vaping, but I think the results are coming out towards the end of this month, early next month, etc. Trades at a roughly round about, well, just less than 7 times actually, PE. What's your sort of your latest on this? Was this just sort of hold and wait until the consultation and look for a re-rating?
Yeah, it splits the room, doesn't it? Because those with an ESG hat on would say that vaping's the worst thing ever, but The counter argument to that is that nicotine, yes, it's addictive, but it's not tobacco. You know, it's so I like the metrics. Return on capital of 38-40% margins, okay, about 12%. Real mix of business, isn't it? You know, you've got to try and look through, because they bought that sports business, health and wellness business, for about 200K, and they had it was worth 1.2 probably, I think, in terms, and they've actually increased their capacity by 40%. So I think these guys are really good operators.
Yeah,
it will trade at this kind of level, I think, despite the good cash flow, despite the good dynamics and the numbers, because of that overhang from the uncertainty on vaping.
Yeah.
You read the headlines and they're not good. I don't necessarily think it's companies like Supreme that are the ones to blame. It's the marketeers and the retailers that are the ones that, sadly, and Chinese imports that really are the ones to be held accountable. Well, could impact them.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see what the government do, because, I mean, you know, the NHS are holding out for vaping to get people off tobacco. So they're giving out 1 million of these vaping devices
not vaping, but they've knitted nicotine X or whatever it's been called, has been going for years, hasn't it? So, so nicotine in that sense is not going to disappear. So even if it becomes prescription, I think it will go to the best of breed suppliers, and Supreme is one of those in the UK.
Yeah, it is with underage and now doing the recycling of disposables as well. Okay, let's move on. The last one, actually, of the counter-cyclical plays was FRP Advisor, which is basically insolvency practitioner, a bit like Begbie's Trainer, but also has some other sort of corporate finance activities. And again, it probably is in a bit of unfortunately, in the right place at the right time, as the number of insolvencies was artificially suppressed during the pandemic by government legislation, and has now started to tick up, not only because of interest rates going up, but you've got zombie companies in struggle, and you've got that backlog, presumably, from that artificial suppression.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we looked at both Begbie's and FRP, and we weren't really trying to play it so much in a way of, gosh, administrations are going to go up and let's buy some FRP. We probably started buying it about 2.5 years ago, because we could see from our own SME investments on the private and public side that FRP were just really nicely positioned on that corporate finance side. So when there was good deal activity, they were benefiting from that. And then you had the nice hedge when obviously things get a little bit more difficult, that you get the benefit from this current kind of trading. We believe that FRPs are more direct way of accessing that SME market as opposed to Begbie's, because you've got 80 to 90% of exposure as of today that's on the insolvency side. So yes, we are maybe being a little bit top down and increasing our exposure here, but it's nicely geared obviously to the overall economy at the moment. It is a trading sweet spot. Definitely.
Yeah, it seems to have a really strong balance sheet as well, because I mean, normally if it's insolvency practitioner, they have to wait to get paid until something happens, but they seem to be perfectly positioned in terms of funding anything working capital that they need if there is a pickup or big pickup in insolvencies.
Yeah, the debt advisory side has been doing pretty well from a cash generation point of view as well, and that tends to be, they're not necessarily having to wait to the end of the admin period. And I don't know if you've noticed, but I don't know the numbers around this, but the number of pre-packs, so basically things going into admin and then being put straight back out again, is probably higher than it's been at any point in any cycle, actually. So pre-packs used to be a bad word, but now they're the friend of the insolvency practitioner, really, aren't they? Because it's so quick. They get their fees, but they get them quicker. Yeah.
That's a really nice
mix of business.
That's a really good point, yeah. I mean, as I say, if you sort of like, they're trading on roughly around about, 9.5 times EBITDA. Less than 11 times EBIT. So they're not exactly roaringly expensive if they've got good growth over the next few years, that's for sure. No. Another sector that's actually been really battered, actually, and you probably know his great insight is the fund managers, and we've got Tatton Asset Management there. What's your sort of your latest on this one in terms of consolidation, but also on the actual business? Because it's a bit of, I think it's a bit of a specialist, isn't it, into sort of like the smaller IFA market, etc. What's your sort of like, you know, your views with this with the fund manager? Because it seems anything which is considered subscale is getting bought out.
Yeah, it's all about regulation, really, isn't it? So I like this play, and maybe missed out a little bit on the overall sector where you've seen quite a lot of M&A activity and things getting bought out at relatively heady multiples. But the reason I like this one is that it's well run, it's low cost in terms of a solution. So it's servicing the IFAs, small, relatively regional IFAs with an MPS, a model portfolio service type solution. So that is really a low-cost option for those IFAs where they're already getting cost pressure, giving them a good kick. And they're really good at customer service. So they built the business pretty much bottom-up on that basis. And having come from the IFA market themselves, they know what the sector's looking for. And as you get further consolidation coming into that IFA market, then actually this is quite a good way to play it if you are an IFA and a wealth manager. Now, the one thing that grates a little bit with me is that they are highly passive in their approach. And of course, being an active manager, we see that as absolute heresy. But actually, you know, it services a part of the market that is looking for that lower cost, tracker-like behavior. And actually, they've done... One thing I do look at is their overall performance of their funds, because I think it's been a sweet spot, as we all know, for trackers over the last few years. And I just want to make sure that they're maintaining that top quartile, typically top and second quartile performance, because that, if they don't, then that's what makes IFAs change, albeit that they're very, very slow in doing so. So I think they're taking part of that discretionary fund management market, and they're switching it into their model. So it's not as if they're having to go out and aggressively win and market to new pockets of IFAs. So they get it coming to them naturally, because that dynamic is changing because of price. So yeah, it's a nice little business. And you know, it's got cash of about £29 million, got a divvy yield, return on capital of 40-odd%, operating margins over 50%.
Yeah.
And a 3-year CAGR of 32%. So yeah, it's a well-run business. They don't have any star fund managers. It's quite strange. You know, it's the first thing you normally you speak to when you're speaking to a wealth manager. You're looking for their pockets of talent, but nobody's ever named. It's all quite anonymous. And you know, it's a very, very efficient customer service back office somewhere. So
Yeah. Well, it must be going to you know, margins above 50%, EBITDA margins above 50%. It's terrific, no doubt about it. I mean, there has been that sort of size. I think Ontario Teachers Pension Scheme bought 7IM, didn't they, for about the same figure last year, September. So, you know, there's definitely there's plenty of interested parties, no doubt about it. Okay, brilliant. Well, thanks very much, Judith, for a fascinating, as always, run through a whole bunch of stocks and the markets. If somebody wants to invest in Downing or any of your funds or any of your colleagues' funds, how best to do that?
You always trick me with this one. It's a simple question, isn't it? So, yes, go to www.downing.co.uk and look for Downing Fund Managers, and you'll see a range of funds there.
Yeah. Well, I must admit, I'm upbeat like you for the outlook for 2024. So we'll hopefully have a better year. So thanks again, Judith, and look forward in touching base in 6 months' time.
Look forward to it.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.